Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
On a Sunday afternoon. We're back. It's 12 after. We're grooving with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, 800-531-3815. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Jim, I'm a happily married woman.
Yeah? You are?
Yeah.
You mean I can't groove?
You mean
you and I can't be grooving?
I don't know.
I think maybe Ray would let you and me groove a little bit on the radio.
Once a week? Okay, I'll ask.
Joan, let's get right into let's talk about a little bit of news first.
Okay.
You didn't know we were going to talk about this.
No.
Oklahoma charged Bernie Ebers yesterday, I think it was, with providing false information to investors.
Right, and because they feel that he hasn't been punished enough at the federal level. So, and they're actually one of many states that are sort of taking the lead in a lot of these areas, going after companies and making corporate governance rules that may go beyond the feds.
Yeah, that actually could turn into kind of a corporate can of worms, couldn't it?
Boy, a corporate chaos, I would think.
Yeah, yeah, but of course, it's not clear that the feds won't be going after Ebers yet, right? I mean, they just haven't made the case yet.
Right, but I think the states are just losing patience a little bit.
Right. Yeah, I see that. You know, and I didn't realize that sort of undercurrent was building out there. Have you guys been tracking that?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. Well, I guess I should have known that since you knew exactly what I was talking about when I didn't tell you I was going to talk about that.
Yeah, I didn't expect that, did you?
I'm impressed. See, folks?
Thank
you. No chopped liver on the Small Business Advocate Show.
We try.
Okay, let's move over. Well, let's stay with that just for a second and ask you if you think that kind of action, of course, let's remember he's innocent until proven guilty. It's America, remember,
uh-huh.
after all. But do you think that kind of activity is making investors feel that maybe a little justice will be done?
Well, yes, I think any time you see, you know, Elliot Spitzer has done a lot in this area as well, and he's
the New York
Attorney General. I think investors probably believe that, you know, the more people involved, the better the chances are for getting a fair deal. But this really strikes at the heart of a big issue that I think is going to get somewhat bigger. Traditionally, states have really regulated corporations, and now with the SEC coming in and writing a lot of rules, there's a question as to who's the preeminent regulator here. And as the SEC proposes more and more rules in this area, I think things might eventually come to a head.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But the thing is, as the economy builds and as the stock market recovers, these cases will become less and less important, won't they? I mean, profits and success heals a lot of wounds, doesn't it?
Well, that's what we've been kind of expecting. These have been so big and so far-reaching cases, however, that I think it will have people will have trouble really forgetting what's really gone on here.
Right, and also I think the average person out there doesn't realize how complicated and I have to admit that I'm to some degree in that category too, that doesn't realize how complicated it is to bring a case like this against some of these folks, because many of them are not it's hard to directly connect them to the crime, isn't it?
Right, and I also, it's got to be very expensive to bring these cases, and I'm not sure how far a lot of these states can go given their budget situations.
Well, if they use all the money they made on the cigarette settlements, they ought to be all right.
Right.
Okay, let's move over and talk about some of the jobs that Kiplinger says are moving overseas. They're not just manufacturing jobs, are they, Joan?
Right, and of course, as you know, we have been sort of pounding away at this theme that our exporters are having a tough time, and we've generally talked about commodities and things like furniture and electronics and things like that, but now we're focusing on service jobs, which are also going overseas. And you might wonder how that can be possible, how you could actually, you know, lift a whole person performing a service up and put them somewhere else, but
right.
we're finding that's what's happening.
Well, absolutely. In fact, and I want to come back to the numbers in just a minute. Let's go ahead and talk about some of the examples. Technology program computer programmers are proliferating in India right now like crazy.
Right,
because
that's very
important. These computer engineers are making a fraction in India. They're being paid a fraction in India and glad to get it of what it costs to do the same thing in the U.S.
That's right. And the Philippines as well. That's another interesting area I hadn't thought of before.
Yeah, these are jobs that are moving offshore. And you know, in the last half hour, we were visiting with Steve Forbes, and the things that we were talking about globalization, and you know, that we were just pointing out that the truth is that this kind of activity that you and I are talking about, Joan, this is the same stuff that's been going on for millennia in the marketplace. It's just happening. It's going across the water a lot easier, and it's happening a lot faster than it used to happen.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, this is, globalization is not some recent evil that's happening. It's just the acceleration and the application of technology to the, you know, to good old fashioned capitalism, isn't it?
Right, that's what's happening.
Another thing that Joan, I think you guys point out is that another one of the some of the service jobs that are being lost are call centers. You know, if you buy something on LL Bean or something like that, and I'm not saying that they're doing this, but a company like that, you might be talking to somebody in Bermuda, not in the United States.
Well, I think people used to be surprised that they weren't talking to someone in their own town. They used to be surprised they were talking to someone in Nebraska. If they were in New York.
What you're saying is when they pick up the phone, they say, now, who's your mother?
Yeah, it's like in Bombay or something.
That's funny. One of the things that you guys point out this week, Joan, in the Kiplinger letter, is that by 2015, nearly 3 million service jobs in the U.S. will have been lost to overseas.
That just boggles my mind. That just sounds huge. Now, we do say that's just a fraction of the number of people working in services in the U.S. now, which is 108 million, but I still think 3 million's got to hurt.
Well, and see, the thing is we're actually feeling that right now. I mean, we're getting the early onset of that right now.
I think so.
And that's the reason why, Joan, I've been saying that even a year from now, as the presidential election rolls around, the economy may be doing great in terms of the indicators, but it could be years before we get back to anywhere close to full employment that we had in, say, 1999.
Oh, I think that's right, yeah.
Well, because there's so many paradigms that are shifting with regard to the way people work, the way they make their living these days.
And right, and this is one of those paradigms that we're talking about.
That's exactly right. Joan, stand by. We're going to take a quick break, folks. It's 20 after. We'll be right back with our good friend, Joan Pride. More to come right after these messages. Back, it's 23 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate. Joan Pride is our guest, our good friend. Joan, one of the things that you guys point out is that the expansion is not, as we talked earlier, is not going to help over the unemployment situation as much as a lot of people would like to. In fact, you guys say that even in this cycle, this year, we're still not going to get unemployment back below 5%.
That's right.
Yep. And so it's an interesting time that's going to be. I just think a year from now is going to be a very interesting time as the political parties are going to be making their cases for and against what's going on, and you know, I predict the economy is going to be doing really well. But there's still going to be several million people out of work, and that's going to make for an interesting election cycle, isn't it?
Boy, I'd be curious to see how this plays out.
Right. Another area of industry, service industries, that you say are actually susceptible. We mentioned the call centers, which you guys all did report on, and we talked about the computer programming. But here's some that I think is interesting. Architecture, income tax preparation, and radiology analysis. Now, what's up with all that?
Well, you think about all these, given our sort of computer literate world, think about all of those and many other professions. They can be done anywhere.
So when I build a house, my next house, and somebody says, who's your architect? And I say it's Kim Jong Jong in China. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, I personally wouldn't want to do that, but I guess a lot of people would. I mean, I have no problem with folks in China. It's just that I would rather see my architect face to face. But maybe not everybody needs to do that.
Well, of course, architecture also includes draftsmanship, draftsman things, drafting stuff.
Right.
So it could be just the farming out of that of those elements. Maybe the the perspective.
The drawings,
that you get,
right?
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Right. That's a good
some
point.
Of those. So maybe that's what it is. But it's but the thing is, it's all about technology, isn't it?
Sure.
Everything that we're talking about is being made to happen through technology.
No question.
Yeah. Also, business functions, you guys say, human resources, and 401k and benefit operations, background checks, relocation services. All of these are things that could wind up going offshore.
Right, and outsourcing has become a big thing in terms of administrative and HR functions with both small and some medium-sized mm-hmm. businesses, too. So if they can cut costs even more in that area, that's going to be very important.
And now here's an interesting thing that I didn't see coming, Joan, and which is why we have you, because if we were for you, we wouldn't have this information. White-collar salaries in the U.S. will be pressured, we'll receive some pressure because of some of this.
Sure. So I guess that's good news for employers, that if there is competition from less well-paid folks overseas, that employers won't feel the pressure to increase salaries over here.
Mm-hmm. This is something, Joan, that I think is a heads up for everybody that we all need to be paying attention to. One of the things I talk about in some of the speeches that I make, Joan, is the concept of wherever they are. You can employ people wherever they are.
Yeah.
You don't have to move them to your hometown. You don't have to relocate your business. You don't have to be dependent upon you have to be dependent upon the talent pool that's in your community, because you can employ people now in many, many areas wherever they are. And what you guys are pointing out is that wherever they are is not just across the county or the state or the country, but across the world.
Right, and think of the opportunities that presents, any kind of business, really.
And Joan, this is something we talked about earlier this week with another guest, and that is the thing that's going to make all of what we were just talking about leap off the ground into another orbit, and that's video conferencing, especially over the internet video conferencing.
That's going to be huge. I still think it's going to require some changes in corporate culture to a certain degree, but I still think that'll be big.
Well, no, there's no question that the corporate culture is going to have to change. But, Joan, I think that happened. I think that began happening, believe it or not, with 911.
Yes.
Would you agree with that?
Oh, no question. That's right.
Because a lot of people took their laptops and went home and worked until their offices were ready. And their bosses wouldn't have thought about doing that prior to 911, wouldn't have thought of letting them get out from under their noses prior to 911. But once they had no choice, they went home, they were found to be productive. And when the boss called and said, hey, your new office is ready, then Susie or Billy said, I'm not coming back.
Right. Plus, in a lot of cases, dealing with a client or another office or something like that, teleconferencing just wasn't an option. It was the only option when flights were grounded or if people were afraid to fly because of terrorism.
Right. What we've got to realize in America, Joan, it seems to me that we are not the manufacturer. I mean, I guess the best way to say it to me is that we've got to really better understand the concept of division of labor. In America, we used to produce almost everything that we needed, right? I mean, we didn't import some stuff, but basically we were pretty self-sufficient. Nowadays, the world is becoming self-sufficient, and we're finding that we've got to buy things from other people, and they've got to buy things from us. And the division of labor is going global.
The global village.
Exactly. Got to take a quick break. It's 29 after the hour. Joan Pride is our guest. I'm Jim Blassingame. I'm your host. And IBM and Office Depot are our sponsors.
Now Now back to ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The small business advocate, Jim Blasingame.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today. 800-531-3815. Toll-free coast to coast. Joan Pride is our guest, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, one of the ways that we're going to deal with the loss of the jobs overseas is really just a realignment of jobs, really, rather than a loss of jobs. And because
right.
since there's going to be a lag in the realignment, it's looking like, you know, that we're taking a hit. But the truth is, when everything settles down, so to speak, which could take a while. I mean, it could take a couple of generations. Who knows? What's going to happen is that the U.S. is going to wind up exporting the things that we do better than anybody else, and China will wind up exporting the things that they do better than everybody else, and it'll be a global marketplace. And what you guys say is that's actually creating, that scenario is coming to pass right now, and it's creating a stronger year ahead for U.S. exporters.
So you're saying we kind of have going to have to go through a period of kind of shaking this out a little bit.
There's no question about it. It's happening. I think it's happening even as we speak, don't you?
Oh, no, absolutely.
But the exports are growing. I mean, we're finding that what we hoped would happen in Mexico, you know, that was the argument for NAFTA, was that the Mexicans would prosper and they'd buy more of our stuff. Well, Mexico hasn't turned out so well, but China is actually one example of how that's actually going to come to pass, I think.
Well, I think that's a very good point, right?
Yeah.
But it's not going to be easy.
Right. But electronics and machinery, those are some of the things that we're going to be exporting in the future. And but unfortunately, though, imports are growing. You guys report this week, the imports are growing faster as our economy gains steam. Our good old, bless their hearts, U.S. consumers are just buying stuff like crazy.
Right. And again, we've got the whole situation with the dollar, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. And that's good. That's another thing that's good for U.S. manufacturing, isn't it?
That's true.
Or for any exporter, whether they're manufacturing or service or whatever. So another thing that you guys point out is that world trade talks are going to stand a better chance of bearing fruit in the next couple of years. Tell us about that.
Well, the U.S. and the Europeans have been in this kind of a war over agricultural subsidies. This has been pretty tough because, as you know, the EU has pretty hefty price supports, and the United
right.
States has been fighting that.
Mm-hmm.
But we think that there's a compromise in the works, and then that's going to sort of get world trade talks back on track.
Yeah, and they're mad at us for our steel tariffs.
Right.
So their fruit tariffs are okay, but our steel tariffs are not.
Sure, I see the logic there.
Yeah, and they, you know, nobody consumes more cigarettes in the world than Europeans. But yet they don't like our fruit if it's got any kind of a hint of any genetic modification.
That's right.
You know, our corn on steroids is going to kill them before the lung cancer does.
I was
right?
going to say, yeah, but genetic modification, which, by the way, I don't think we've actually proven does anything necessarily bad.
But we're pretty sure cigarettes causes lung cancer, though, right?
Yeah, I think that one's taken care of.
What
yeah.
was that, 1966 that they started putting that on the... It's only been 40 years, folks.
Right.
Okay, here's another one. This is a little bit of a sad note, I guess, and certainly if you're one of these folks, it is. You guys point out that some of the reservists that are in Iraq right now are on active duty, at least wherever they are. They're not going to be coming home anytime soon, and that businesses and families are going to have to take up the slack.
Right, and this is very difficult, as you know, for anyone either who's a key employee or maybe runs a business themselves. You know, the reservists did not realize they were going to have to be over as long as they have been, and their tours are being extended. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, that the Pentagon has said that from now on, when you go over, if you're a reservist, figure on being away for a year,
mm-hmm.
which to me sounds like an awfully long time for a reservist.
Yep, it is. It does. And the thing about it is, I mean, there's a lot of problems that this creates for the families and for the jobs that they're leaving, the professions that they're leaving, and everything. But you know what, Joan? I was a reservist once for a long time, actually over 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a time when I was pretty sure I was going to be... In fact, I commanded a company that was the only one the Army had in the active or reserves in the world.
Wow.
And when we went into Tehran back in 79 to try to collect, to Jimmy Carter's debacle trying to get the folks out.
Yeah.
I mean, I expected to go. We were put on notice that we were going to go if things blew up over there. They wind up not blowing up. We didn't go. But the thing is, reservists understand this. They're not doing it just because they think it's a, you know, some kind of little daycare, you know, with a uniform.
Did they understand that they'd be away for over a year?
They understand that could happen.
Okay.
That if the country needs them, they could be called up for that purpose. They understand that, and yet they do it anyway. And that's, Joan, why we should salute these people. We should be so proud of them, because this is service above and beyond. The reservists, to me, are even greater champions, if you can imagine that, than the active duty people, because, as you say, they're breaking up their lives for this.
Right.
20 till. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Let me remind you, coming up in the show straight ahead, we're going to be visiting with Jeffrey Zabar, Ben McConnell, Jim Ballard, and Barry Nadel. And those are our guests. I'll come for the show coming up, and I'll tell you more about them a little bit later on. Joan Pride is our guest. As I said, she's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, your website is Kiplinger.com, KIPLINGER.com. Folks, a lot of good things there on the website, but you can also subscribe to all of their letters, which including the weekly letter, the Washington letter, which is now in its 80th year, and also the three biweekly letters. That's the weekly letter. The biweeklies are California, the tax letter, and the agriculture letter, and then you got a magazine too, don't you, John?
That's right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And folks, Joan, give us that phone number, too, please.
Yes, our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
And don't forget, there's a 30-day free trial on all of those publications. Joan, I'm excited about the 15th of September.
Why is that?
Because that's the week that you guys are celebrating your 80th anniversary. And on that day, on Monday, I'm going to be in your offices. You and I are going to be sitting across the table from each other doing what we're doing right now for a little while. But that's also the day I'm going to be helping you guys celebrate your 80th anniversary week, and I'm going to be interviewing, in addition to talking to you, I'll be interviewing Knight Kiplinger, the grandson of the founder who's running the shop right now, and his father, Austin Kiplinger, the son of the founder, who was Willard Kiplinger, by the way. Let's get his name out there. And I'm just really excited. Well, I'll be up there all week long, as you know, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. I'll be up there with the SBA and some other folks all that week, but we're kicking the week off with in your offices, and I'm really looking forward to that.
Boy, it doesn't get much better than that, does it?
I can see how it would be like a dream come true for you, Joan.
I thought you meant for you.
No, I meant for you, for me to be face-to-face with you there. I mean,
It's something. I don't know if I'd use the word dream, but
well,
it's definitely
I'm sure you're going to need somebody to pinch you. It's just an incredible thing to think that this all could be real.
That's true.
Right?
Scary.
Yeah,
scary.
I can tell you're excited. Anyway, let's move on down and talk about U.S. security. Joan, 2 years after 9/11, are we any safer? That's the question Kiplinger poses this week.
Well, it's kind of a yes and no answer. And I think we have tightened security in a lot of areas, airports, for example, power plants, offices, and we've tried to beef up our intelligence operations. So we do have things, you know, things are sort of moving in the right direction, I would say.
Well, and of course, we haven't had any incidents in almost 2 years.
Right.
Now.
And also, if you think about the emergency responders, we may have mentioned this last week, but when you look at the northeastern and I guess other states as well, blackout last week, the emergency responders were able to move very quickly because they had drilled in those kinds of situations after 9/11 and because of 9/11.
And weren't we treated to an interesting model of behavior by the New Yorkers that week?
I know, hard to believe, but true.
Well, I don't want to even make a joke about them anymore. I've done that, but I was really proud of the way they behaved.
Well, from what I read, some of their comments, they said, you know, once we realized it wasn't a terrorist attack, we were so relieved that we just sort of sat back and relaxed.
Right, but people were, you know, the best of humanity came out in everybody, and
it did.
That they were helping people. I heard stories of of young people going up flights of, you know, multiple flights of stairs to bring handicapped people and older people down, and just I was just so proud of all of them and when all that went on. And but Joan, one of the things that I'd like to go a little aside on this just a little bit.
Sure.
We've recently gotten a report from NASA this week on the fact that if the information had gotten upstream all the way to the leaders, that we knew that perhaps something could have been done, or at least attempted, to bring the Columbia astronauts home safely back in February, or I guess, or March, maybe, whenever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I just saw a correlation between that and 911. Now, my other experts on this say that there was no way to know if we had known what some of the field people in the FBI knew, if the top people had known about that. Many people think that that still wouldn't have been enough information to have stopped what happened on 911. But my point is, that issue and this thing with NASA makes me feel that our bureaus, our departments of government, are not serving us. They're serving more than serving themselves and their own hierarchy. And to me, that's something we need to be addressing right now. What do you think?
Right. Well, I do see the point that it's very hard to look back on something with 20/20 hindsight and say this should have been done and that should have been done, and the problem would have been averted, because I think you have that parallel in both situations. It's really hard to see that how either one could have been averted, but
We'll never know, Joan.
But we'll never know, right? Exactly. But it's I don't agree with the people who insist that it's obvious that we could have stopped anything. But
I'm certainly not saying
right.
That.
No, I know that.
I'm just saying that in both cases, the common denominator is that the message from people who were where the rubber meets the road, so to speak, didn't get to the people who could make the ultimate decision and pull the trigger, so to speak.
And, you know, and it's very possible that in the example of 9/11, it's very possible that since that happened, you've had intelligence improvements that may have stopped other attacks. But since those attacks haven't occurred, we don't know.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. You know, I used to say the best compliment that I ever got whenever people were coming to hear me speak or if I ever had a training course or whatever, was for them not to say anything about the environment, for them not to say anything about how comfortable the chair was or anything. I wanted that to be a sort of a, you know, a seamless kind of thing.
To be a given.
Exactly. And so maybe that's what's happening.
Right.
The fact that we don't have any news, that's the good news. And,
right.
And, but they don't get a lot of credit for that, do they?
True.
So we need to point that out, and I'm glad you did. Tim Till, stay with us. We'll be right back. Steppenwolf will pick us up.
Looking for adventure in whatever comes our way. Yeah, darling, go.
We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, let's move down to the bottom page 3 and talk about web-based entertainment, which you guys say is about to take off with consumers. This could be good news for the technology industry, couldn't it?
This is kind of neat. You can link your PCs with your electronics. You can download movies, music, and other media from the Internet.
Yeah.
And, and the key here is not just by wires, but also by those Wi-Fi radio beams that you love so much.
Oh, yeah, I love my Wi-Fi.
So you can just run all over the house. I can just picture you running all over the house doing this.
Absolutely. I love my Wi-Fi. And no, seriously, over the next 5 years, the state of home entertainment is really going to transform, isn't it?
It sure is.
And on so many different levels. A lot of different things that have been expensive. You know, Joan, like
HDTV is one of them.
Exactly. Of course, don't they have a mandate to have everybody has to have HDTV by, what, 2005 or something like that?
It's coming up pretty soon, I think.
And all the broadcasters have to have that capability. But not only HDTVs, but also the plasma screens are coming way down.
Right.
So it's going to be, you know, it's still not going to be cheap, but it's not going to be like $15,000.
Right, right. I would say definitely below 10.
Yeah, and of course you're gonna. I think a lot of people are, you know, probably within 3 years or so, you'll be able to get a pretty decent little package for maybe $1,000 or so. That would be my prediction, and so it's going to be interesting to see. But folks, that's one of the reasons why a regular television, you know, a 27-inch television is $149 right now.
That's right.
They're trying to get rid of the things because you're not going to want to watch them in about 3 years, are
you? That's right. No.
Yeah. It's going to be like a, it's going to be like an old, a 20-year-old PC or something. It'll be a boat anchor or a fern or a fern stand or something like
right.
that. Okay, John, let's talk about 401ks and some of the failing pension plans that are out there. This is really in your wheelhouse.
Well, failing pensions is sort of grabbing all the headlines, but if you think about it, failing pensions cover a very small part of the population, mm-hmm. the old-style pensions. And
those are the defined benefit, right?
Defined benefit pension mm-hmm. plans, right, where you get your lifetime benefit at retirement. But with a lot of people who will be retiring in the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years, they are going to be dependent mainly on their 401ks and their IRAs, because most companies nowadays don't have the old-style pensions. And the problem with that is people not only are not saving enough for retirement, but they may live too long
right.
and underestimate how long they're going to live and outlive their retirement savings.
A friend of mine said to me the other day, he said, I used to be worried that I wasn't going to live long enough to spend my money. He said, now I'm pretty sure I'm going to outlive it.
Right. And
he said, I got to go back to work.
That's a pretty scary prospect.
Well, yeah, but This particular guy retired at 55.
Okay.
So give me a break. You know, I mean, I don't. I'll be honest with you. I don't have any sympathy. I really don't. Maybe this is, you can do whatever you want to do about this, folks. But anybody who retires in their 50s, even in their 40s, some people, Joan. I know people who retired as teachers in their late 40s,
and they're
not working, and they're just living off whatever they were getting. I mean, I don't have any sympathy for people who retire that young. And all of a sudden, they say, wow, you mean that's not going to last me for 100 years?
But I think people are not preparing themselves for that prospect, because we're transitioning from this environment where you had what I would call an annuitized benefit from a pension mm-hmm. to something where you have this big pot of money and you have to draw it down very carefully.
Right. You're going to have to be more. And, Joan, this is so much in keeping, so compatible with the 21st century being the century of the entrepreneur.
Consumer-driven, because we've talked about consumer-driven health insurance. This is consumer-driven retirement benefit.
But also, yes, Joan, but also we're going to have to be responsible for our own lives. We're not going to be adopted
right.
by people anymore. This is so...
The company is not going to be the big patron.
That's exactly right. And, Joan, that now you see, and as I'm sure you always understood, and believe me when I've said that the 21st century is a century of the entrepreneur. And, Joan, when I say that, I'm not just talking about owners.
That's
employees,
right.
Employees, too.
Sure. That's right.
We're going to have to be entrepreneurs for our own account, aren't we?
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's that way. I mean, we're seeing it in corporate America more and more. We're seeing it in small businesses. And what we've got to do, though, Joan, is we've got to get this moved over so that attitude is in government as well.
That's right. It needs to be ingrained everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
And that may be one of the next wars are fought, Joan, is over some of these government employees, you know, finally having to do what the rest of us are doing.
Well, that'll be big when it happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Joan, thank you for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. We couldn't do without her. She'll be back next week. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and every single member of our military standing a post, reservist or active duty, I don't care. We're so proud of you. God bless you, and God be with you. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program really is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.